Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Daily Ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Our first guest is this Penn State story, Mike Persak of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Wrote a really good piece on it. James Franklin and Penn State named in a lawsuit by a former player, and he joins us now. Mike, thanks so much for hopping on with us here in Portland, Oregon, man. We appreciate it. First of all, just your thoughts on how bad of a look this is for the program, given what they went through about 6 years ago.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. I mean, it's obviously a terrible look, and the details in the lawsuit are extremely graphic. Current prominent players are named in it. Obviously, James Franklin is named in it. It's obviously a bad look, and I think, a lot of times it's probably people remember the what happened a few years ago with Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno and all that. And while I think it's unfair to, bring that up, obviously Jerry Sandusky's name was evoked in this lawsuit too. Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine that the administration and all that is very, conscious of, public perception of the program and the school too. So it's obviously not a good look, individually as a case itself, but on a grander scheme too.
Well, and two, you'll have to refresh my memory on this because I don't follow it as closely as you do. But this is kind of the second controversy, if I remember correctly, that's been around James Franklin. There was something with the team doctor. So if you could refresh our memory what that was. And then I know it's just speculation at this point, but now kind of the second thing going on around him. How do we feel like this plays out for James Franklin?
The original, what you're referring to is team doctor, basically came out saying that the football staff was trying to keep him from pulling players out of games and from giving them proper treatment, that sort of thing. That's sort of quieted down. I'm not exactly sure how it all played out, but nothing really ended up coming from it. In terms of what happens with James Franklin, obviously, it's important to remember that this is just a lawsuit right now. Nothing has been proven. And the other thing about this is that it was investigated, and that's that was pretty much Penn State's statement on it yesterday, was that nobody really knew the details. Everyone knew that there's an internal investigation surrounding this sort of thing, surrounding complaints around hazing. And it was investigated internally. It was investigated by the police, and it was eventually brought to the district attorney, who opted not to pursue any criminal charges. So that's pretty much what Penn State is, their statement on is that, listen, it's been looked into. We didn't find any fault. That's their statements. But yeah, in terms of what could happen, it's hard to say. It's hard to, I don't really want to speculate on it too much, because I don't necessarily feel qualified to say exactly how bad it could get. Certainly not a good thing.
Yeah, I think you look at the school and you instantly have to take it seriously. But when I read your piece, I couldn't help, because the player that's in this lawsuit is Isaiah Humphreys, and he's alleging that James Franklin ignored violent sexual hazing on the Nittany Lions football team that had some players, as you put it in your story on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette website, saying, "I'm going to Sandusky you," which is just a horrific look. And look, you do want to take it seriously, but running through the story and how you kind of outlined what's been going on, it seems like they've had a couple investigations and they've come away with no witnesses, nobody to really corroborate what this kid is saying. There was one player, I think that it was in the story that you put, that he was suspended for a game and they said it was conduct detrimental to the team, but it was for one game. Do you think Penn State's looking at this and this is potentially something where they end up having to pay a kid to settle a lawsuit? Do you think this gets thrown out? Where do you think their confidence is for Penn State right now and backing James Franklin in something like this?
Well, the interesting, I mean, obviously, you know, I guess to start with, Penn State is currently saying, like, you know, like I said, we looked into it and didn't find anything. What the lawsuit alleges, because it does mention that there was an investigation, the lawsuit alleges that Penn State actively tried to hide the evidence and kind of get everybody on the same page to throw off the lawsuit, or throw off the investigation, I should say. So that's, you know, that's brought into it. And the troubling part, because it isn't just necessarily that Franklin is alleged to have known about it. The lawsuit is pretty much claiming that coaches and specifically Franklin knew about it, and then there were active measures to punish Isaiah Humphreys for complaining about it, that and to essentially like ostracize him and force him to transfer and kind of get him out of the program. So that's kind of the part of it that that brings Franklin into it. It isn't necessarily that he was endorsing the hazing or things like that. As far as I can tell, it's more that he knew about it after the fact and didn't do anything, and specifically took actions, or the football program took actions to punish Isaiah Humphreys for coming out about it. Obviously, all allegedly, but that's what the lawsuit said.
Well, and being an idiot when it comes to legal matters, I have no clue how this plays out. Just what are, like, for us that want to follow the story, what's the next thing we should look for in this?
So the lawsuit demands at the end, the last like point on the you know, the case file is it demands a jury trial. So obviously, you would look for the court itself to accept the case and set up a jury trial and all that. And obviously, there's a chance that it doesn't get that far, that you know, Isaiah Humphreys settles with the school and it goes away too. That's always a possibility. But yeah, that's kind of the next step, is to see exactly what does happen. And I'm not, you know, I'm not necessarily an expert on it either, but on you know, legal proceedings, but that's at least what I'm looking for.
None of us are lawyers, Mike. It's okay. Mike Persak, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, covering this Penn State situation, the lawsuit alleging Penn State players took part in graphic hazing and Franklin ignored comments. Really good write-up, really good reporting, and we'll keep following this story, Mike, and maybe have you on if something comes out more about this. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. There we go. Great stuff from Mike Persak in Pittsburgh on the Penn State lawsuit and everything going on there. Let's shift gears. We talked about the Oregon potentially hiring Joe Moorhead is what everybody is reporting. And Tyson Alger, our good friend, longtime beat writer covering the Oregon Ducks for The Athletic. He's on Twitter at Tyson Alger, joins us now. Tyson, if this ends up being true and Oregon does finally send out the press release because he signs the deal, what do you make of them nabbing Joe Moorhead as the new OC?
I think it's a really good hire. I mean, especially if you look back to, you know, if you just go back to Monday when Cristobal was talking about, you know, what they were looking for in this position, and he said, you know, no offense to Marcus Arroyo, but they were looking for an upgrade. And there was no reason to think Oregon couldn't. I mean, this is a much better job than it was 2-3 years ago when Arroyo came on board. They're coming off a Rose Bowl. Cristobal has established himself as a bona fide head coach, Power Five head coach, you know, one of the major up and comers in the sport. And so Oregon had a lot of kind of leverage and time to make this decision. And if you look at Moorhead's resume outside of the last 2 years as a head coach at Mississippi State, he's been outstanding. I mean, he did the Penn State's offense in 1 year, essentially what Jim Leavitt did that 1 year from when it went from Brady Hoke to Leavitt. He was able to usher in substantial performance increases in just one season. And if you look back, he did that at Fordham before that. He's a really well-respected mind in college football. He likes running a lot of those RPOs, and it was one kind of the first offenses to really fundamentalize that. And I think overall this is kind of a home run hire for the Ducks, especially when you look at you know, Washington just hired the guy that was fired before Moorhead replaced him at Penn State. I mean, this is if you're talking about trying to win the press conference or the press release, I think Oregon's got it here.
Well, we saw last year, too, when you upgrade a coordinator, what it can mean for one side of the ball, and going from Leavitt to Avalos, the numbers speak for themselves, and Oregon's defense is one of the best we've seen in a long time. I feel like you've upgraded there as well. Now, an offensive coordinator from Arroyo to Moorhead, my only fear is just the crystal ball factor. Like, he has a style that he wants to play. He wants to be physical. He wants to run the football. And he has a pretty big hand on what they do just on offense. Do you think that he's learned, maybe, and now that Moorhead's coming in with all this experience, that he'll back off a little bit on that side of the ball?
You know, that's going to be the really interesting going forward, because I was reading this story about Moorhead's time at Fordham, and he was really talking about how, you know, things were able to really take off when he was given complete reign to do what he wanted on offense. Mm-hmm. And as you brought up, there was definitely some kind of clashing opinions on how much of Oregon's kind of conservativeness on offense this year was from Arroyo, or it was kind of Cristobal kind of stirring the drink a little bit himself too. But I feel like this is a situation where either Moorhead is going to be able to come in and do exactly what he wants, or he's completely on the same page with Cristobal in terms of what they want to do. Because, I mean, if this is an issue for Moorhead in terms of him not wanting to have too many people have input on his offense, I mean, I doubt he would get into something where he thinks he's going to be kind of cut off at the shins. But, you know, then again, he is coming off of being fired. But, I mean, he is still an attractive offensive coordinator candidate, and I mean this is a big job he landed. So I would imagine with a coach with this sort of resume, he'll be able to have more leeway in being able to kind of institute what he wants with his offense.
Tyson Alger is our guest here, Duck beat writer. Find him on Twitter at Tyson Alger. How would De'Aaron King look in a Duck uniform running a Joe Moorhead offense, in your opinion?
Hey, sorry, what was that? I lost you there.
How would De'Aaron King look in a Duck uniform running a Joe Moorhead offense in Eugene?
Pretty good.
Are they sniffing? Do you think they're sniffing around there? Because right now I think all we have is a couple freshmen and Tyler Shuck, right?
Right. And, I mean, I'm so excited for this spring. Like, this is the first spring that I've been excited to cover in quite some time. Just because you're going to have, like, you basically have like three or four unknown guys at quarterback. I mean, Tyler Shuck, I'm not saying he's unknown, but like, we haven't really been able to see what he's been able to do with kind of without Herbert kind of hanging over him as a shadow. So I, you know, between Butterfield, Shuck and some of the other guys that they could potentially be bringing in, I think this is going to be just a fantastic spring to watch, especially, you know, if they do bring in an offensive coordinator who lets them open it up a little bit. But I mean, you know, spending the last 6 months or so talking to guys about Tyler Shuck, I mean, you know, the players seem to think that he's the real deal. And then I get that in more in a real sense than we ever did with kind of like a little bit of the hype train that we had with like Jeff Lockie 5 years ago, or you know, Taylor Alley. I feel like that was a little bit more in-house produced, but like when you talk to some of the players, I think they legitimately think that Shuck, like I don't think Shuck will be bad by any means. I think he has a very high floor. I'm just not quite sure where his ceiling is yet.
Yeah, he seems like he'll be a fun guy to cover, too. He's got a good personality, a little swagger to him. It was fun to listen to him out for the spring game. I do got to ask, though, how long did it take to get over the Rose Bowl hangover?
I mean, we've seen how quickly these Oregon guys move on, whether it be on recruiting, and I mean,
oh no, stop. We're not talking about the football team here. I was told
I'm talking about a beat writer.
Very good information that the guy that partied the hardest at the media party was one beat writer in particular, and I think he's asking how the recovery went.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, my sources aren't all that great in this field, and it would be a stretch for me to speak out of turn on events that may or may not have happened. But the thing is I promise you, I will get you that information when we get it.
Oh, okay,
I'm
okay.
Not able to deliver it at said time.
You gotta cross check your references. I get it. You gotta do your due diligence. Well, I understand.
Until we hear otherwise, I'm gonna run with that guy got hammered on Cosmos. That's what we're going with.
We did have a couple of glasses of red wine on the last night. Got a little bougie down there. I will ask though, and I know Cristobal mention it, but I'm just curious, what's the latest we're hearing on Jalen Redd? Because he not playing the Rose Bowl, that was a big head scratcher for everybody wondering what happened. Have we found out what happened? What's his status?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what happened yet, but what we do know is, you know, he was asked at his Monday press conference whether or not he's with the team, and Chris Paul confirmed that he's back with the team and taking place in activities, and that's really about all he expanded on that. He said it was still personal reasons. It seemed like he didn't want to talk much about the matter. So it's, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's a confusing thing because he took part in every single Rose Bowl activity. He was at Media Day and all that stuff, and then, you know, he just kind of disappeared. So, I mean, that's not generally how it works, but, you know, that's the information that they've provided at this time. So.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. Tyson Alger, The Athletic, covering the Oregon Ducks, our good friend of the show. His Twitter handle is @TysonAlger. Enjoy this time, because I'm sure in about 2 hours you'll have to report some more stuff and maybe check in on that story from Southern California about a guy who got hammered at the Rose Bowl. We'd like to hear the details on that someday.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to track that one down, but I'll do my best, guys.
All right, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.